Good morning. You're tuned in to Community Radio KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll get a report from a meeting last night about Boulder's municipalisation efforts. This is ahead of a City Council meeting on Thursday with a significant vote on the process. Then, local officials and members of the tech industry are meeting in Denver today for the inaugural Colorado Smart Cities Symposium. We'll hear exactly what makes a city smart. Then, Letting Go Is All We Have to Hold On To. It's a new book by local author and comedian Greg Eisenberg. He'll speak about it at the Boulder Bookstore this evening. No comments on the comment line today, but we will hear a listener commentary on homelessness in Boulder. After headlines from the BBC at 8:30, it's time for science. And today on How on Earth, CU Boulder researchers have discovered a key mechanism by which skin begins to develop in embryos, shedding light on the genetic roots of birth defects like cleft palate and paving the way for development of more functional skin grafts for burn victims. Today on How on Earth, we'll bring you an interview with lead researcher, Associate Professor Ray Yee, who explains some of the secrets he's been trying to uncover about how skin begins. At 9 o'clock, it's Alan Watts rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Governor John Hickenlooper yesterday launched a political action committee called Giddy Up, which could collect as much as $5,000 a year from donors. PACs raise money privately to influence elections or legislation. The Colorado Sun reports that Hickenlooper's committee will likely raise his national profile. The Democrat, who is term limited as governor, has hinted at the possibility of stepping into national politics. There have been rumours swirling this summer about Hickenlooper considering a run for the White House. Money raised through Hickenlooper's PAC could cover his political travel and could also be used to donate to other candidates. The Colorado Supreme Court yesterday ruled on a 2016 state law about resentencing inmates who originally had been sent to prison for life without parole while they were juveniles. The Supreme Court yesterday upheld a 2016 state law. The Denver Post reports that the 18th Judicial District Attorney, George Brockler, who's the Republican candidate in the Attorney General's race, had challenged the law, which affected a handful of state prison inmates who are serving life without parole for felony murder. The US Supreme Court in 2012 ruled that sentencing juveniles to life in prison without the possibility of parole was unconstitutional. Residents and elected officials in Louisville are pushing back against a proposal by a subsidiary company of Xcel Energy to erect a nearly 200-foot tall private communications tower on land that is adjacent to open space. The Daily Camera reports that the Louisville City Council yesterday directed city staff to draft a letter of opposition for the proposed facility that the company says will provide faster, more efficient service and better managed outages by connecting the electric and gas grid with new energy devices and technologies. A special use review is to be submitted to the Boulder County Commissioners at some point later this year for the project. Some small grass fires were ignited near Niwot yesterday as a result of sparks from a passing train. Local fire agencies quickly extinguished the fires that were in the area of the Diagonal Highway and Niwot Road. The Times Call reports that a Burlington Northern Santa Fe train that was passing through the area ignited a few spot fires just after noon yesterday. And the sparks mainly ignited nearby grasses between North 63rd Street and Niwot Road. The fire was extinguished shortly before 2 p.m. More hot, dry weather in the forecast for the Front Range today. Sunny skies for Tuesday with highs in the low 90s. Cooling off a little bit for Wednesday. Highs forecast to get into the low 80s with a chance of afternoon thunderstorms. But highs again, close to 80 degrees on Thursday and cooling off down to the mid-70s for Friday. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to Community Radio, KGNU. The proposed Boulder Municipal Controlled Utility was the subject of a public forum last night to provide an update to interested residents. The update comes ahead of a Thursday Boulder City Council meeting when members will consider a motion to authorise the city manager to enter into agreements with Xcel Energy to authorise permanent property rights and to reimburse all costs associated with separation of the electric utility system. KGNU's Ros Brown attended last night's session and brings us this report.
A long-awaited agreement between Boulder and Xcel Energy over the city's efforts to form a municipal utility is on the City Council agenda Thursday night. The agreement comes after several extensions granted by the state's Public Utilities Commission, as the City of Boulder and Xcel hammered out what is deemed fair to both parties. Steve Cadenach is Boulder's Director of Electric Utility Development and joined Boulder's efforts toward municipalization after doing similar work for the City of Fort Collins, which has city-owned utilities.
And one thing I can honestly say is they bring value to the communities that they operate in, not only because they bring revenue to the community, but also because they support the values of the local citizens.
Boulder's effort to create a city-owned utility began in 2010 when it declined to renew a 20-year contract with Xcel. Voters have twice approved moving forward with municipalization, but will face a final vote in the November 2020 elections. Boulder City Attorney Tom Carr.
Remember, the goal is that in November 2020, the voters in the City of Boulder will one more time go and tell us whether or not they go forward. This time, our goal is to give them an accurate representation of the total cost that this is going to be. The big touchstone for us is go, no go. That's the November 2020 election. So our job is to get the voters a number that they can rely upon at the November 2020 election. So the agreement divides it up. So the costs that are going to be incurred prior to go, no go are the scopes of work, which I've talked about and are pretty much done. Detailed design drawings, which is the engineering work to figure out where everything actually goes, bid solicitation and selection. The goal is to provide the voters with a view on how much it's going to cost to physically separate the system. This is one of the most important decisions that will be made in this generation for the City of Boulder. We want the community to have as much time as possible to go through and discuss these numbers. So we will have a full public debate on this prior to the election, prior to even us drafting the ballot measures.
Carr said agreements between Boulder and Xcel are due to the PUC by October 26th. City of Boulder Deputy Director of Communications Ben Irwin says his department began a process in 2017 to better communicate about the municipalization project. A working group was formed to offer suggestions as to how to go about that, and they delivered a report to the City Council in July.
One of our key goals is to help ensure that people, when they go to vote in 2020 on this topic, that they feel as informed as possible about it. We really want to work very hard and use our communications tools and our engagement activities to try to raise awareness about this project, especially as it gets closer and closer to November 2020, and make sure the people who go in and make their decision do so with all the information that they need. And we intend to create a series of different types of videos to help explain the project and help explain what we're learning. In 2020, there'll be a lot of people just really thinking about this for the first time, as they have to consider how they're going to vote. So we're going to be working to try to take all this good work and provide it in different ways for different levels of interest and attention so that we can give people as much information as possible for their vote.
Fewer than 20 people attended last night's update on municipalization at the Senior Center, but more will likely attend for a public hearing on Thursday night in City Council chambers. For KGNU, I'm Ros Brown.
It's 8:13. Today in Denver, civic leaders, government officials and leaders in the tech industry and nonprofits are gathering for the inaugural Colorado Smart Cities Symposium. The day-long event happens at the McNichols Civic Center and it's being organized by the Colorado Technology Association. I spoke with Franny Matthews, who's CEO of the CTA, along with Aidan Mitchell, who's Vice President and General Manager of IoT Global Solutions at Arrow Electronics. That's one of the tech companies sponsoring the event.
Fundamentally, no matter what the size of the city, they're probably dealing with three vectors that they're trying to solve for. One is population growth. All cities are dramatically growing in terms of inward migration towards cities away from rural environments. It's no different in the United States. Two, as people move in, being able to move around, the mobility and transportation within cities are challenged because the funding both to create the infrastructure that's needed or the physical space available to build infrastructure is challenged or limited. And three, it's all about competitiveness. Cities are entities that are seeking to drive inward investment both around enterprise and people. It's got to be a great place to live, work, and play. And therefore, cities do compete. Just like businesses, if you're not growing, you're dying. The same is true of cities. So all those three vectors are now coming together to say, well, if we're growing, your infrastructure challenged, you can't build your way out of this, and we want to be a thriving city in the future, they're turning towards technology to make it easier to move around, to be able to access information and services within the city easier, and to build new technologies and infrastructure that's going to, encourage inward investment and new companies to pick you above others as the place to grow and build.
Well, Franny, can you give us an example of something that might be happening here in Colorado, in Denver, or any of the other state cities that encompasses what Aidan has just been talking about how to use technology to make cities more livable around these areas of transportation and some of the bigger challenges as well, like climate change?
Well, I will tell you that, we're looking at transportation right now in Colorado and the issues that we just can't be laying down more asphalt in order to take care of the traffic issues that we have. So there's a lot of IoT-based solutions that are being looked at by CDOT to improve the experience so that we can more efficiently move around the city and the state.
Go ahead,
and I'll build on just a couple of practical examples, Maeve. If you look at, we've got a great light rail infrastructure now throughout our multiple city complexes here. But often to utilize that, it's about how you solve for the last mile. So driving collaborations, like in the city of Lone Tree here in Denver South, who has partnered with Uber to launch an on-demand microtransit pilot that they call the Lone Tree Link on Demand System, app-based connection so you can solve for the last mile to get more people on light rail and therefore ease congestion on the major arteries like Highway 25. That's a very real, simple use of data and applications to move people. So we're also working with a police department here in one of the cities who are reimagining public safety around schools and how they're going to utilize technology from, gunshot detection to people monitoring to gas detection, and that it's perfectly portable to other areas, maybe like venues or concerts, so that these assets are multi-purposed and can be utilized right throughout the year for cost efficiency. I think there's two examples of what's going on that are really pragmatic and down to earth.
Well, Franny, you're part of the Colorado Technology Association, a statewide body. And are we seeing technology being used and available by communities around the state? Because we also often, in addition to inequity and economic inequity, we often talk about, the digital divide and the fact that many people in rural Colorado don't even have access to broadband and high-speed internet. So what's happening statewide regarding this?
Well, broadband is, and I don't have I can't tell you the map specifically, but broadband is definitely moving out into rural areas very quickly. I was just on the Western Slope last week and really found that as I met with technologists and citizens that we weren't hearing a lot of discussion about the access to broadband. I think the last, to the curb continues to be an issue in some areas. But the bigger issue is making sure that it is reliable. And so I'm seeing that being built out. I take the view from a positive perspective that technology is actually the enabler for inclusivity. And so I don't look at it as creating a bigger divide. I look at it as creating access, easy access to citizens for more inclusivity.
And I'd just add on to that, Maeve, here's another big breakthrough. When cities and municipalities used to talk about infrastructure in the past, it was interlinked into concrete. You know, it was a road or it was a bridge or it was a major bypass or whatever. Now, all the way through their legislature, their planning, and their movement, they've broadened the definition of infrastructure to really include, you know, information technology and fiber and how that reinforces broadband. And as a result, you've seen the cities, even inside the Alliance and especially inside the Alliance, they've either undertaken major deployments already where they're digging and laying the fiber with either a Dish or a CenturyLink or a Zayo, who are all participant in the Alliance with these cities. And now you're really looking at this large expanded both fiber to cellular to open area networks to be this backbone of the technology that they can deploy. And I think that's been a big breakthrough on the cities just in terms of what they define as infrastructure.
That's Aidan Mitchell. He's with Arrow Electronics. We also heard from Franny Matthews, CEO of the Colorado Technology Association, and they're both involved in the Colorado Smart Cities Symposium. It's the inaugural one, and it's happening today in Denver all day at the McNichols Civic Center. And you can find more information online at news.kgnu.org. Time now for a listener commentary.
My name is Darren O'Connor. I've been a resident of Boulder since 1994, and I'm a member of Boulder Rights Watch, an advocacy group working with and for the rights of homeless people in Boulder. After 1 year and spending millions of dollars, the city's homelessness strategy is failing our homeless community. There is no longer any drop-in overnight shelter, so that people experiencing homelessness for their own valid reasons cannot get through Boulder's coordinated entry system to attain overnight shelter. Coordinated entry is a new process people must go through to access services. It uses a ranking system to decide who gets into shelters and who stays out on the streets. Coordinated entry replaces the first-come, first-served walk-up policy previously in place. People should not be having a harder time accessing life-sustaining overnight shelter after Boulder invested nearly $6 million to improve our homelessness strategy. City staff's August 3rd homelessness strategy update informs us of a reported 18% decrease in homeless overnight services. Some council members and city staff assert that overnight services aren't turning people away, and then from that conclude that there is no shortage of beds. However, this report does not support such a conclusion, stating, "Data does not exist to draw conclusions about the reasons for decreased demand for adult emergency shelter." A decrease of 18% shelter bed utilization represents a glaring failure to provide the most basic necessary life-saving support. It is now evident that the modified system is prohibiting extremely vulnerable people from accessing overnight protection from the elements. The report quantifies the high number of vulnerable people attempting access, revealing that 3 out of 5 clients of coordinated entry had been homeless at least 12 months out of the past 3 years, and 71% reported a disabling condition. There can be little doubt that barriers to system access, including complicated rules that challenge even a high-functioning person, are preventing entry to basic shelter for extremely vulnerable people. Our court navigator, who works directly to help homeless people navigate Boulder's homeless services to improve their situation, shared her thoughts, which seem to support this conclusion. She shared, and I quote, "I am a reasonably well-educated and mentally healthy person who is rested and housed and familiar with the system of social services, yet I struggle to understand it. I wonder how someone who has mental health issues, is addicted, is sleep-deprived and hungry, can be expected to navigate this system. End quote. A homeless services system that confuses our professional court navigator surely confuses many people seeking overnight shelter. Some council members and some city staff's conclusion that we have sufficient overnight services based on not turning people away is therefore at the least a misrepresentation, at worst, a falsehood. People are, in fact, turned away at coordinated entry. Lack of any means to report such rebukes to those seeking aid does not mean people are not being turned away, but rather that staff and council members are accepting as true assertions that are readily invalidated. The report asserts that, though it lacks data for comparison to recent successes, new strategies are twice as effective as the previous year. Since no data on the previous year exists, claiming such a victory seems beyond disingenuous. The success of one of the new strategies, giving people a one-way ticket out of town, likely accounts for a solid half of the planned exits, the city now claims in its reported data. It is a heartless standard that shipping people out of town without any tracking of their experience once they are gone is counted a success. While Boulder touts empty shelter beds and people shipped out of town as a success, the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, representing homeless people in Boise, Idaho, just won a case in the Ninth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals. The ruling holds that camping bans are cruel and unusual punishment if people have no actual accessible overnight shelter. Boulder's camping ordinance and barriers to shelter are certainly at risk of violating this holding. Though the ruling is not binding in Colorado, Boulder is ripe for a similar legal challenge. Last but not least, city staff continues to neglect creating a meaningful arbitration process for people kicked out of the Boulder shelter. Last Christmas, a man froze to death after the Boulder shelter kicked him out. He had no way to challenge this ban, and now the grievance process remains fatally flawed. Unless and until the grievance process includes an available independent review and ruling for someone kicked out, city staff have not addressed this deadly shortcoming. Given the shortcomings 1 year into Boulder's homelessness strategy, the city must not stay the course as its report advocates. Further investment in overnight services with a goal of easing access and providing more beds is essential. Our majority disabled homeless community deserves and our community should demand better. My name is Darren O'Connor and I have lived in Boulder since 1994. I am a Chancellor Scholar Law student at the University of Denver Sturm College of Law and a member of Boulder Rights Watch. I am currently interning at the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty. The opinions expressed are my own.
And there will be an affordable housing forum happening this evening from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Boulder on Pennsylvania Avenue. And that's hosted by Cliff Wilming, who is the Green Party candidate in the Boulder County Commissioner's race and also Boulder Democratic Socialists of America, Boulder DSA. Greg Eisenberg is a comedian, a performer and author of a new book, Letting Go is All We Have to Hold On To, a global philosophical adventure. He'll be speaking at the Boulder Bookstore this evening about the book that's a series of short vignettes aimed at getting us to think and maybe laugh.
I can verify with 100% certainty that I don't have a clue what I'm talking about. The best way to focus on the moment is to sit back, think about where you want to end up, and work backwards from there. We were practicing Zen when the identity theft happened, which is why they didn't really get much. They say you often write the book that you need to read. And I saw a gap in humor today that is lifting us up rather than bringing us down. That is for sure. And I think that humor is a great way to actually inform us, open up our minds, revisit important themes and subjects about our daily lives and our spiritual lives, and lead us forward with new questions that we should be asking ourselves. And I think that's a great use of humor, and I felt like I needed to read a book like that myself. As we live, I think, in somewhat cynical times, and more recently, I would say that we live in somewhat caustic times. And during a time when a lot of the content is actually dumbing us down, and a lot of the technology is actually making us more isolated, I thought we needed more uplifting humor that uses humor the way Mark Twain described it, which is humor is the good-natured side of a truth.
It does seem that so much of our communication these days is caustic, is cynical. And if we look at how people are communicating on social media platforms, things are boiled down to a tweet or a meme or a Facebook post. And your writings, they are short little vignettes, 1 to 2 sentences. And yet there's a lot more depth to them than what we're seeing currently out there.
I appreciate that you noticed that. They are one sentence vignettes or aphorisms, or what I call laphorisms. And they're also called, as you'll see in the introduction to the book, the Heisenberg Principles. And my name is Greg Heisenberg, and it's named after the Heisenberg Uncertainty Principle. And the Heisenberg Principles are really trying to show, in some ways, the impossibility or the futility of trying to boil complex topics down to a one-sentence concept.
You've used this term, Buddhist humor. What exactly is that? Why did you come up with this term?
Sure, yeah. I call it Buddhist humor because a lot of the material is about thoughts. It's about the thinking process itself and how we experience ourselves psychologically, how we value ourselves, how we mitigate the truth a little bit to comfort ourselves, and even the power games we play with each other. So the material is asking us to revisit some of the conventional idioms and expressions we use and asks us to take a closer look at them, hopefully stirring our conversation about who we are forward.
Greg Heisenberg will speak about his new book, Letting Go Is All We Have to Hold On To, this evening at 7:30 p.m. at the Boulder Bookstore. And you can also catch his multimedia presentation, Even the Earth is Bipolar, that's at the Fisk Planetarium on October 13th. Find out more at curvedspacecomedy.com. It is 8:31. You're listening to KGNU.